Morning, today's Daf Mechulin, Daf Sadi. We are in the second page of the seventh parak of Chulin. Yesterday we started the seventh parak of the Masechta, and we are discussing the Issur of Gid Anasha. After the fifth parak of Osav Espino, the sixth parak of Kisui Adam, we are now in the seventh parak, which is dealing with the Gid Anasha, and that's the prohibition of the Torah of the sciatic nerve. We already discussed yesterday some of the anomalies that existed regarding this particular Issur in the Torah. One is presented well before the Torah was given. Torah was given Parshas Yisro. Mitzvahs were given, first mitzvah was given in Parshas Bo. So basically post-Exodus is when mitzvahs became a talking point in the Torah. And meanwhile, the Yisro of Gid Anasha is presented earlier. It was said in Parshas Vayishlach. And as we're going to see in the course of this parak, it's going to be somewhat of a controversy. We're actually going to touch on it in this morning's daf. We're going to see it's a controversy whether or not the Bnei Yaakov, the Bnei Yisrael, but I'm going to call them Bnei Yaakov just so that we're clear who I'm describing. Are the Bnei Yaakov subject to the sisser of the Torah? Meaning, I know there's a general question of whether or not the Avos kept the Torah, did not keep the Torah, but over here, specifically, Gid Anasha, which is actually presented in Parshas Vayishlach, so was that Noeg by the Bnei Yaakov? So, and for that matter, Yaakov as well. So stay tuned. That machlokis is going to be touched on today, but we're really going to principally discuss it a little bit later in this parak. The Isser itself, another anomaly regarding this Isser, the Gid Anasha may be tasteless. It may be a tasteless item. So, and none of us at this table, I would assume, I could certainly easily speak on behalf of myself. So I never tried the Gid Anasha, nor am I going to try the Gid Anasha. It's an Isser in the Torah. But the Gemara has a debate whether or not it's yesh tam or ain tam. Does it have taste or does it not have taste? And so it's really interesting that the Torah is prohibiting something that may be tasteless, It's machlokas amongst the Tanayim. Those are some of the interesting things regarding Gid Anasha. And yesterday and today, really for the entirety of today, we're going to be focusing on one particular issue, and that is the Gid Anasha as it applies to a carbon. Is the Gid Anasha going to apply to a carbon, yes or no? Well, the Mishnah gave us a very clear answer yesterday, and the answer was yes. The Mishnah, in the beginning of the Perek, said that it's noeg, whether we're talking about chulin or mukdashin. Whether it's non-consecrated or consecrated animals, the Isser of Gid Anasha applies. Now, by chulin, makes perfect sense. Meaning you have an animal that's non-consecrated, and you shech the animal, and now you enjoy. You can eat the animal. You can eat the muscle of the animal, the organs of the animal. The things we're precluded from eating are the blood and the chalev and the Gid Anasha. So these are the things that are prohibited within an animal that's permitted. Okay, but let's try to wrap our head around a carbon. You have an animal which is a carbon. Let's talk about a regular case of a carbon, meaning that the animal is obviously not born a carbon. An animal becomes a carbon because a person, the owner of the animal, is makdish the animal. So under those circumstances, what then becomes of the Gid Anasha of that animal? Now it requires a little bit of heavy thinking, a little heavy lifting. The Gid Anasha prior to the Hekdesh was Usser. Now that you're Makdish the animal, now what? There is a new Isser on the animal. The Isser is the Isser of Me'ila. One is not allowed to get benefit from something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And in this case, it's a carbon. So there's an Isser of Me'ila. Does the Isser of Me'ila spread out through the entire animal, even parts that are already Usser? So this takes us to the topic of Isser Chalal Isser. Can I have one Isser imposed upon another Isser? Generally speaking, the rule is Ein Isser Chalal Isser, that one Isser does not impose upon another Isser. Now, there are variables to consider, but if we just went with the simple pshat of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, so now what comes out is that we have the Gid Anasha, which was already Usser from birth. Then what we're trying to do is superimpose another Isser of Me'il on top of it, and we say generally, Ein Isser Chalal Isser. And so therefore, the Isser of Kachim cannot apply to the Gid Anasha. And that brought us yesterday to a bit of an impasse, meaning because if what I'm saying is correct, so then how do you understand the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah says that the Isser of Hekdesh, that the Isser of Gid Anasha applies to Karbanos. Okay? So that is the dilemma. And what we're going to be doing for really the entirety of today's daf is we're trying to solve for the problem. How can the Isser of Gid Anasha apply to Karbanos? Or I could just flip around the question. How can Karbanos and the Isser of Me'ila apply to the Gid Anasha? One way or another, we have a problem, and we have to solve for the problem. So yesterday, what we tried to do is suggest maybe that the Gid and Asha, our Mishnah is subscribing to the opinion that there's no time when it comes to the Gid and Asha. If there's no time when it comes to the Gid and Asha, so if I were to eat the Gid and Asha, so although I'd be violating the Isser, but there's no benefit because it doesn't taste like anything. And so maybe what the Mishnah is coming to tell us is that the Isser of Gid and Asha applies to a carbon because there's no Isser of Me'ila when it comes to the Gid and Asha. Well, why is there no Isser of Me'ila? Because it's a tasteless item. That was the Gemara's proposal yesterday, but the Gemara did not like that proposal. Because the author of our Mishnayos, as the Gemara made clear yesterday, are of the opinion that yesh begidim enosin tam. Meaning, it is a valid opinion throughout the Tanayim of ein begidim enosin tam, but that's not the opinion subscribed to by our Mishnayos. Our Mishnayos hold yesh begidim enosin tam, and so therefore it's just simply not a path we can go down in explaining a Mishnah. Good. So we are now up to the Gemara where we left off yesterday on Pei Tesem and Beis, about two-thirds of the way down, and Manos Yankshin is Basu, Gidin Hashem Yesh Ba'manos in Tamar, is Asura, Elahacha. Elahacha, the first words in the line is Zu Asura, and we're beginning in the Gemara now with the words Elahacha, and here now the Gemara is going to go down a new path in terms of trying to explain how can we have the Isser Gidin Hashem and the Isser of Hektish applied to one item. So the Gemara now goes down the following path. Elahacha Bevlados Kashim Askinim, we're talking about now fetuses of a carbon. So up until now, we've been assuming that we're talking about an animal that wasn't a carbon. It was born a regular animal, and then I consecrated the animal later in its life. The Gemara says, let's change gears. We're now talking about an animal that was actually a carbon, female, which means, of course, that it's a shlamim. Now, I'd say chatas, but we all know that even though chatas comes from a female, but Vlad chatas is holich lemisa, so that's not an option. So when we're talking about the fetuses of a carbon, so really there's only one carbon that we could be talking about, which is a shlamim. But that's fine. Talking about a fetus of a shlamim, and we could also be talking about bechor as well, but we'll save that for just a little bit later. So we're talking about the fetuses of a carbon, and now the kasav noi bishlo. So we are now saying a couple of things. We're going to say that the Isser of Gid and Asher applies to the Shlo, applies to the fetus. Now, if you remember yesterday, we did the Mishnah yesterday, and I hope you remember that yesterday was a Machlokas in the Mishnah at the end of the Mishnah, towards the end of the Mishnah. So hold on to that thought for just a moment. But right now, we're going to assume that the Isser of Gid and Asher applies to the Gid Hanasha of the fetus in the mother's womb, and Kasavar Vladus Kashim Bemei Iman Hein Kedoshim. And then we also have to we have to unpackage another issue. When I have a fetus developing inside of a carbon, the mother's a carbon, and the mother got pregnant, and the mother now is developing a fetus inside. At what point does that fetus inside have the kedusha of a carbon? I'll give you two options. One option is as it develops inside. A second option is only after it's born. Meaning while developing inside, it doesn't really have any particular status, independent status. And yes, it may be related to the issue of uber yarchibo, umar lav yarchima, who could be, but the Gemara doesn't discuss it, so I'll leave that off the table. But the other option is that the fetus only gets kedusha even though it was developing inside of a carbon. Its mother, its host mother is a carbon, but it only gets a kedusha after it emerges. This is, again, another basic machlokas amongst the Tanaim, and we're going to be assuming right now that the kedusha of a fetus developing inside starts at its formation, meaning at the point of conception or as the fetus starts to develop inside. So that's when it's going to have kedusha. And now, what just happened? By putting everything together, we are now just constructed a scenario in which both Yisurim apply at the same time. So they're now going to come at the same time. Okay, so it's a lot to wrap your head around. It's a lot for us to wrap our head around. But we are now describing the case of our Mishnah, where the Isser of Gid and Asher is going to be applying to a carbon. Again, the problem is that if it's zeh or zeh, if it's not simultaneous, so we have the rule of ein Isser chalal Isser. So we just construct a scenario where it can come simultaneously. And notably, the fetus is developing inside of a mother that's a carbon. And we're assuming that the kedusha of the fetus is occurring as it's forming. We're assuming that the Isser of Gid and Asher also applies as it's forming. And so therefore, as it's developing a fetus inside, both Isserim are occurring concurrently. That's where we are right now. The Gemara pokes a lot of questions at this thesis. So first and foremost, the textual problem of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah does talk about the Isser of Gidin Asher that applies to a fetus, and the Mishnah presents it as a machlokas. So isn't it strange that you're telling me that the Mishnah is opening up, assuming we're talking about a fetus, and then only later in the Mishnah is the Mishnah present us with the with a surprise of, hey, it's not a unanimous position, but it's a machlokas. What just happened? So the Gemara says, Hachikamar, the Gemara says, well, that's not so strange. Davar zeh machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan. Meaning, here's the way we're going to read the Mishnah. The Mishnah is, in fact, in the beginning talking about a fetus and talking about the Gidin Asher of a fetus. And the Gemara is assuming that the Isser of Gidin Asher applies to a fetus. And then, as we go on in the Mishnah, what we then discover is not everyone's in agreement with the position, but rather it's a machlokas. So the textual problem is not such a textual problem. There's a way to read the Mishnah. The Gemara continues, Umimatsis Amar Tetarvaya Bahade Adadikasi. But then the Gemara says, but I'm bothered now with a logistic issue. And that is that we made the following assumptions. The fetus that develops inside. Now, it's really interesting because nowadays, how do we know the fetus as it develops inside, so we have wonderful technologies that allow us to take a look at a fetus developing inside. Back in the day. So it wasn't radically different, meaning they didn't have the technology to capture the picture, but very often they shechted animals, they opened up the animal inside, and so they were able to see the developing fetuses. And so from their perspective, they had some idea of how the fetus develops inside. Now we're going to get a window into their concept of how fetuses develop inside based on a couple of Mishnahs that we're going to learn together. Actually, it's one Mishnah that we're going to learn together and the understanding of this Mishnah. Now again, what we're going to learn, basically, just so that we don't get too lost in all these trees right now, we're basically going to construct the argument that when the fetus develops inside, the Gidin Asher is only a later developmental stage of its development. So that means to say that, and I'm not now giving any scientific information, I'm just throwing out numbers just so we can wrap our head around the idea of the Gemara. Let's say that the nerves start developing in the fourth month of gestation. Again, that's not correct. I'm just so that we can have a discussion. So that means to say now that the whole premise of the answer of the Gemara is that the Yisurim are occurring concurrently. But what the Gemara now is going to point out is that, but developmentally, it's just simply not the case. The Gidin Asher only comes at a later developmental stage of fetal development, and so therefore, our argument of concurrence no longer is going to apply. That's going to be the Gemara's point. Okay, and then we run into the problem of Ein Isser Chalal Isser. Correct. Let's see all this inside now. Now, the way the Gemara is going to take us to this point is going to be a little bit complicated, but the point is very straightforward. The Gemara says, the Gemara here quotes a Mishnah from Nazir. Now, the Mishnah Nazir talks about the Nazir comes into contact with the Mason. Of course, we know. The halach is that when a Nazir takes on his Nazirus, so he is to abstain from coming into contact with a mace, he violates one of his three special Isurim when he becomes a Nazir not to come into contact with a mace. But then, of course, not only does he violate an Isur, but then he's got to restart the count. After he's Matar himself, so then he counts anew. All the days that he counted up until now are simply not counted. They're thrown out, and he's got to count anew. V'atanan elu tameus ha-Nazir megaleach. These are the tumas that a Nazir is going to shave his head. Meaning as part of the Tahara process, excuse me, and the process of counting anew, so there's also a giluach, there's a shaving of the head, and that's why it's described as giluach. So if he comes into contact, alameis v'alkazayis ben ameis. If he comes into contact with a human remains, or even just but a kazayis of human remains. That's the Mishnah Nazir. And Rashi also over here points out very clearly that no other tumah is going to do this to him. Meaning if he comes into contact with a sheretz or an avela, so he'll be tameh, but that won't take away his nazirus. His nazirus is only going to be knocked out with only tumas meis. The Mishnah is a little problematic. And the Gemara now notes the problem with the Mishnah. V'kashilan al-kazayis ben ameis megalecha kulu l'kol shekein. The construct of the Mishnah is very strange. The Mishnah says, you know, if he comes into contact with human remains of what seems to be the entire body, well, he's got to start fresh. And if he comes into contact with a kezias of a mace, well, he's got to start fresh. Once I have the second point, you know, the first point is now obvious. And the Gemara asks exactly that question. And the Gemara says, V'amar Rav Yochanan lo nitzricha el nefesh lo nikshiru evarav begidin. So Rav Yochanan now injects a chiddush into the Mishnah. When the Mishnah was first describing al-ha-meis, it wasn't talking about a human remains of a developed body. Because if a kezayis min hameis is going to give off tuma and is going to force him to count anew, well, so is certainly an entire mace. That goes without saying. The entire mace being described in that Mishnah is talking about where Rachmanas, a fetus was aborted. A fetus was aborted very early in its developmental stage, before its sinews were developed. Now, the word Gidin in general is a broader term used throughout the Mishnah and the Gemara to describe basically anything which is hard in the body. Tendons, ligaments, nerves, right? Thick nerve cords. So those are all given the terms Gidin. What the Mishnah over here, according to Rav Yochanan, is coming to teach us is the following. Even though the fetus that was aborted was really premature and really underdeveloped, it's so underdeveloped, it doesn't even have its fetuses formed yet. Nevertheless, that aborted fetus is going to give off tumas meis. That's the point the Mishnah in Nazir is coming to teach us. Now that we've seen that Mishnah in Nazir through the eyes of Rav Yochanan, now what have we just learned together? We just learned together that in human fetal development, the sinews, the gidim, only come at a later stage. We are going to make an assumption, a leap. The Gemara doesn't even flinch. The Gemara is not even bothered by making this assumption that human fetal development is going to be the same as animal fetal development. And that it means to say now that the gidim only come developmentally at a later point in time. And now the Gemara makes exactly this point. Alma, we are on the top of Tsadi Amud Aleph. Amma Isra Mukdashim Kadim. So now, as we look at the fetus in developing inside of the mother, so the mother's a carbon. What's the first Isra that's going to apply to the fetus? The Isra of Hektesh. Meaning, what about Gidanasha? There is no Gidanasha yet. The Gidanasha only develops later on in its fetal development. So now, the suggestion you made earlier that the Isurim were concurrent, we no longer have concurrence. So Amma Yisr Mukdashim Kadim, Afagav Yisr Mukdashim Kadim, Asi Yisr Gid Chayil Alayhu. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm not gonna argue with you. Meaning that's the Mishnah Nazir, and that's Rav Yochanan's explanation of the Mishnah, and it seems like everyone agrees. But what the Gemara now is going to argue is the following: yes, the Gid Anasha develops later on, but I'm going to argue that the Isr of Gid Anasha is going to superimpose on top of the Isr of Meila. Now, why? Shekein Isur Nog Bivnei Noach. And the Gemara over here presents a really interesting argument. Now, the rule is an Isser Chalal Isser, that one Isser cannot impose on top of another Isser. That's the rule. And then there are, of course, rule breakers. There are exceptions to the rule. If the second Isser represents something which is stronger, something that is more expansive, so then the second Isser can in fact overlay on top of the first Isser. How is Gid Anasha any more expansive than the Isser of Me'ila? So the Gemara over here proposes a really interesting argument. Well, you know, Gid Anasha applies to Bnei Noach. Now, the word Bnei Noach in this context has a limited definition. Generally, when we say Bnei Noach throughout all of Shas, we mean the entire human race. Anyone who are descendants of Noach. That's not what it means over here. Bnei Noach over here just simply means that the Jewish people held by this mitzvah of Gid Anasha even before Ma'amad Har Sinai, even before Matan Torah. Well, why? And again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning of Shir today. Because the Isser of Gid Anasha is presented in Parshas Vayishlach. And there is an opinion, and again, we'll see this later in the Mishnayos, but there is an opinion that says that Gid Anasha applies to the Bnei Yaakov. Bnei Yaakov, and again, including Yaakov as well, the Bnei Yaakov held by the Isser of Gid Anasha. And so because now the Isser applies to Bnei Noach, so it is therefore now I'm going to try to fill in the blank over here because I'm going to struggle. It's a stronger Isser. And it's hard to say it's a stronger Isser, just because it applied earlier in history. It's a more expansive Isser. Well, that's also a little bit hard to argue, because it doesn't apply to other people of the world other than Jews. So it's, I guess, the best adjective, although it's a more historical Isser. Okay.
Question. It was given in the parasha Vayishlach, it was given as an observation, it was given as a commandment.
Okay, good. So I'm telling you that this is subject to a machlokas. Oh. The Mishnah later on is going to debate that issue. So, yes.
Sorry, why don't we use the concept of, because it's going to develop a gid later on, that we assume it has enough? It's like, you know, we have a woman.
Right, in other words, right. It's easy to project. But in terms of Isurim, I like that argument, but the Gemara is not employed over here. And the Gemara just simply says that Isurim come as the item itself comes in. And since the Gidanasha only introduces itself later on, so that means to say that the Isser of Gidanasha is only going to be introduced later on. I mean, I do like the argument, but the Gemara does not propose it. So the Gemara says now, the idea that the Isser of Gidanasha applies historically to the Bnei Yaakov, that's the Shita of Rav Yehuda, our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda because in our Mishnah we said that the Gidanasha Isser applies to both the right and the left back leg. As we will learn later in our Perek, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that it only applies to one of the two, not to both. And he thinks it's the right one. But we'll get to that later. So anyway, so now comes out that our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. How can you construct an argument that our Mishnahs are subscribing to the Shita of Rav Yehuda when clearly our Mishnah is not? So the Gemara says, look, our Mishnah is not authored by Rav Yehuda. Our Mishnah is authored by, now I'll say Rav Yehuda Anasi, but at this point in my life now, like I'm a little more sophisticated, a little bit more, not much more. But in other words, it's not the authorship of the Mishnayos of Rav Yehuda Anasi, he's the editor of the Mishnayos. But whoever the author of the Tan of our Mishnah is does not have to unilaterally hold by Rav Yehuda. So on one issue, he subscribes to Rav Yehuda's position, and another one, he does not. On the issue of which Gidanasha does it apply to, the right or the left, our Mishnah does not subscribe to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, meaning it's both but not one. In terms of historically, when did the Isser begin? So the author of our Mishnah is holding, like Rabbi Yehuda, it goes back to the Bnei Yaakov. Okay, so that's where we stand right now, that we are in the middle of a proposal. How can I have the Isser of Gidanasha and the Isser of Hektish apply both to the same item? And right now the Gemara's proposal is that the Isser of Gidanasha is going to overlay on top of the Isser of Hektish because we're talking about a fetus, developing fetus. The Gidim do not come until a later point in time developmentally. And nevertheless, the Isser of Gid is going to impose itself on top of the Isser of Hektish. And why should that be? Because it's an Isser Chamor. And even though I'm using the word Isser Chamor, I recognize that might not be the best way to describe it. It's a more historical Isser. Okay. Gemara, take a breath. I know that's a lot. I know that's like a lot to wrap our heads around. Amen to Shamalei l'Rabbi Yehuda b'Tameya, the Isser Lav. Kachim de Isser Karis mishamaslai. So the Gemara says, look, I'm ready to entertain this when we're talking about an animal that's a non-kosher species of animal. Where there the Isser is an Isser Lav. But Kachim de Isser Karis mishamaslai. But if we're talking about an animal which is an actual carbon animal, meaning, just a moment earlier, the Gemara was entertaining a non-kosher animal. Non-kosher animal is a carbon? Obviously not. Meaning a non-kosher animal is hektesh? Sure, why not? Meaning if I want to take a non-kosher animal and designate it as hektesh, so in other words, it's kedushas bedek habayis, that's fine. So the Gemara there says, okay, I'm ready to have that discussion, where the Isser Gid is going to overlay on top of, superimpose itself on top of the Isser of hektesh. I'm ready to entertain that. But if we're talking about a bona fide carbon, I'm totally unprepared to say that the Isser of Gid should superimpose on top of a carbon. Why? Because when we're talking about a carbon, we are now in the area of kares. Now, what does that mean, kares, when it comes to carbon? Rashi over here explains, because when it comes to a carbon, there are many opportunities obviously we don't want, but there are many opportunities to violate the Isser of kares. Rashi says, Alidei kachim, balidei kares, kigon achlu betuma, o pigal, o nosar. You eat this carbon in the state of tuma, or the Isser of pigal, or the Isser of nosar. So these are all actions in which one is subject to kares. So now, the Gemara is basically saying, so now, think about it. We're talking about a carbon with a potential Isser kares, and now you want to tell me that a Isser lav is going to come along and superimpose on top of an already existing kares? That's really difficult to argue. So the Gemara finally realizes that once again now it has hit a dead end. And so now Ella. So here we go now with, I think it's the third round, right? Hard to keep score over here in terms of how many dead ends we've gone. But once again, we're trying to solve for our original problem. How can the Isser of Hektesh and the Isser of Gidanasha both apply to the same item, considering that we have this rule of Ein Isser Chalal Isser? Ela hach b'mevaker saskinan deberechem kadosh. So maybe we're talking about a bechor. Okay, now a bechor, it comes out of its mother. Now the bechor comes out of its mother and it's going to have kedusha just by the fact that it's born. And now we're going to propose is that the Isser of Hektesh and the Isser of Gidanasha are going to both apply. Now, how can that be? So let's take a look at Rashi over here. I'm reading the Rashi. We're not talking about where the mother is a karban, but now as we head down this new pathway, this new avenue, we're talking about just its regular birth. It just happens to be, it's the firstborn. V'ashminim, Rashi continues, v'ashminim tani didan, da'afagav de'en gid no'eg b'shar mukdashim. Now in general, the Isser Gid is not going to apply to karbanos in general. Da'i Isser mukdashim kadim. Generally speaking, if I have a fetus that's coming out of its mother, who is a karban? So the Isser Me'ila comes first, and there's no room for the Isser Gid, because in Isser Chalal Isser. Kidamarti yitziras uber kodemis, v'sulo asi Isser Gid v'chayil. Good. That's in general when I have the fetus being born to its mother, who is a karban. But afilo hachi yesh mukdashim shehagid noig b'hem kagon bechor. But if it's a bechor animal that's being born to a regular mother, to a non-karban mother, so now we can have this discussion. Mimanafshach inoig b'shlo iser gid kodem v'sulo paka v'ein noig b'shlo tarvayo b'hadi adad kase. Because Rashi says it doesn't matter which direction we're going to go. If, let's say, the Gidanasha Isser applies to the Shlil, it applies to the fetus, so that's fine. Meaning, so now we have the Isser Gid, and now as it emerges, so now we're going to have the Isser Hektish go ahead and impose itself on top of the Isser Gid. And Vesula Paka, and it's not, and the Isser Gid is not going to go away. And again, maybe you can make the argument that there's not going to be an Isser of Me'ila, but so what? Meaning the whole problem that we're trying to solve for is, how can you have the Isser Gid Anusha by a karban? And now the answer is, by a Bechor, it's going to be a karban, and the Isser Gid is there. Why? Because it came first. Why did it come first? Because one argument you can make is that the Isser of Gid Anusha applies even while it's a developing fetus. And the E'en Noig Bishlel, and if you want to take the position that the Isser Gid Anusha doesn't apply as a fetus, meaning because that was a machlokes der Mishnah, Tavai Bahadeh Adad De'ase. So now, when does the Kedusha come? When it's born. When does the Isser Gid Anusha come? When it's born. So what is that now? Simultaneous. And upon simultaneous Isurim, so then both can land. This is now our new path that we're headed down to. Ebay Seyma, the Gemara says, or if you want, I can go back to the answer of Karban, even though we ended up on a dead end on that road. But Ebay Seyma, Vlados Kashim, Behav Yasin, Hen Kedoshin. But we could say that it's talking about a Karban, meaning that the fetus is born to its mother, who's a Karban. And although previously we didn't like it because we assumed that the Kedusha is in utero, but the Gemara says, but again, that also is subject to a machlokas. And there are those who are of the opinion that the fetus that's developing inside of its mother, who's a karban, does itself not become a karban until only at the point of emergence, only as it's coming out of its mother. And if that's the case, if we're assuming that position, so then the Isser of Gidanush and the Isser of karban are bevasachas, or simultaneous, and that solves for that problem as well. So,
what means the Gid is talking about, or it's talking about that because a Bechor is only a Bechor after it's born,
right?
Not before,
right?
So, what does the Gemara mean?
The term Berechem Kadosh means upon emergence. I know it's a strange way to articulate it, but that's what it means.
It means when it emerges.
Yes, correct. Okay, so far so good. Okay, everyone, now we can exhale. That was honestly a lot of information in terms of for solving for a problem. The problem is that our Mishnah says that the Isser of Gid Anusha applies to Karbanos. The problem is the issues of Isser Chalal Isser versus Bevas Achas, and with numerous variables to take into consideration. When developmentally, when do the Gidim come in? Halachically, when does the developing fetus inside become Kadosh? When does it not become Kadosh? Historically, when does the Isser of Gid apply? Does it apply only on Mamad Har Sinai? Did it apply even earlier? So there are numerous variables to take into consideration. This is, okay, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a complicated Gemara, but there are numerous variables to take into consideration. But if not to lose the forest, the basic discussion of the Gemara was, how can the Isser of Gid Anusha apply to a Karban when you take into consideration the principle of Ein Isser Chalal Isser? And so the Gemara came up with two possible solutions to that problem. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Excuse me. We're continuing the Gemara. We're in Sadi Amud Aleph. We're about a third of the way down. The first one is the line is Hen Kedoshin. I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef Lo Shenu LaKashem HaNechalim. This discussion that the Gen Anasha applies to a karban is only for those karbanos which are consumed. But karbanos which are not consumed, i.e. a karban ola, we don't consume those karbanos. Ein Isser Gid Noig Bahem. So the Isser of Gid is not going to apply to those karbanos. Rav Yochanan Amar, Echa Kadashim Nechalim, Echa Kadashim Shein Nechalim, Isser Gid Noig Bahem. And on that, Rav Yochanan disagrees. He says that whether it's a karban that is ne'echal, whether it's a karban that's eno ne'echal, the Isser of Gid is going to apply to them. Now, what we have over here seemingly is a machlokas. I'm Rav Papa v'lo plig, but Rav Papa says there is no machlokas. Kan la'al koso, kan la'al loso. Over here, the distinction that we're going to be making is the distinction between getting malchus versus offering it up onto the Mizbeach. Now, if we're talking about a karban that's consumed by us, meaning a shlamim, so if we were to eat the Gid Anasha, we would be subject to getting malchus because we ate something that we're allowed to eat, but of course we're not allowed to eat it because of the issue of Gid Anasha. But in principle, we're allowed to eat it. As opposed to when it comes to an ola, where it comes to karban ola, where of course we're not allowed to eat that animal, so we're not going to get malchus for eating the Gid Anasha because altogether we weren't allowed to eat that animal. Maybe you could talk about the malchus for eating a karban ola, which is supposed to go up onto the Mizbeach. But vis-a-vis Gid Anasha, it's not something which is consumable, it's supposed to go up onto the Mizbeach. So what we meant by that is that there's no malchus per se for eating it, but of course there's an isser of putting it up onto the Mizbeach. Ben, just give me a moment. Let's just finish the thread of the Gemara. Iganami, the Gemara now has a slightly different version. Another way to separate this debate over here that we just saw is that it's not a debate. One is talking about lechalso, to separate, and the other one is lahalos, to offer it. Now, meaning as follows. If you take a look at Rashi. Rashi, second wide line down, towards the bottom. L'shachrina kan l'chaltso kan l'aloso. Mandarme ein noig ba'ola l'chaltso kamar. Meaning that when we're saying that the Gid Anasha doesn't apply to an ola, it means that you don't have to take out the Gid Anasha from the ola. She'ena mitzuva l'chaltso min ha'yarech. Meaning, consider. We're offering a karban ola. The entirety of the animal is going up onto the Mizbeach. Maybe we shouldn't leave the Gid Anasha there, for reasons which we're going to explain a little bit later this morning. So what we're learning together now is, no, leave it there. And the one that says that you can't offer it on the Mizbeach, meaning after it separates, meaning if for whatever reason by karban ola, somebody came along and separated the Gid Anasha from the thigh of the animal, so once the Gid Anasha is now an independent, separate entity, you are not allowed to put it onto the Mizbeach, and again, for reasons in which we're going to articulate in just a moment. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar La'alos Pligin. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says that whether or not one is allowed to offer up the Gid Anasha on the Mizbeach is subject to a machlokes etanya. And he quotes down the following price. Okay, we have over here what seems to be a discrepancy between psukim. By karban ola, simple question, okay, because I know it's been very complicated today. So a simple question. What part of the animal goes up onto the Mizbeach? So one pasuk says, V'yiktira kohen es hakol ha-mizbecha. So one pasuk says very clearly that you take the whole thing and you bring it up onto the Mizbeach. And that comes to include the bones and the sinews and the horns and the hooves and yachal afilu pirsho tamalamer v'asiso l'secha basra v'hadam. On the other hand, however, let's say the horns disconnect from the karban ola. Do I bring the horns up by themselves? No, because we have another pasuk says v'asiso l'secha basra v'hadam. What are the essential components of an animal of a karban ola that are brought up onto the Mizbeach? The meat and the blood. So basically, if the bones or any of these other items are attached to the animal, so there's no requirement to detach the items from the animal, keep it connected and just put it up onto the Mizbeach. But once we hit the point of detachment, so then they do not come up by themselves. But the Gemara says, but wait one second, we're still in the Braisa. Well, if I just focus on the Pasuk of Basar V'Dam, maybe here's what the Torah wants us to do when it comes to karban ola. Separate the animal out, put the bones on one side, put the horns and hooves on that very same side, take the meat, take the blood, put it on the other side, take the meat and the blood, put it up onto the Mizbeach, and everything else does not go up onto the Mizbeach. Tamar lamar v'yiktira kohen es hakol ha-mizbecha. Yeah, but then I just bounce back to the original pasuk of put everything up onto the mizbech. So where are we right now? A little bit confused. Meaning, on one hand, the Torah says put everything up onto the mizbech. On the other hand, the Torah says basar v'dam. Haketz mechubar mialu pirshu afilu b'rosh hashem mizbech yardu. So what is the resolution? It is that if everything is connected, so then everything goes up. But once disconnected, it does not go up. So what you see over here in this brisa is this idea that items that aren't fundamentally supposed to go up onto the mizbech, but once they are still attached and connected to the animal, go up onto the mizbech. Now the Gemara says that there is an opinion that says that once separated, it shouldn't go up onto the mizbech, and furthermore, if it goes up onto the mizbech, you take it down from the mizbech. So Rebbe, detailing the Gemara now, identifies a Tanu who subscribes to that, and that's the opinion of Rebbe. The Gemara quotes now another Braisa. V'iktira kohenes hakol rabba satamas v'aginim v'akonayim v'atalafim. V'afilu pirshu. The Torah says put everything up onto the mizbeach, even the hooves, the horns, bones, sinews, horns, hooves. V'afilu pirshu. And even if they are detached, now, what about the pasuk of Abasav Adam? Bipokin. That's only talking about the following scenario. It went up on top of the Mizbech. It's a huge fire on the top of the Mizbech. Fire, of course, is heat. Heat, of course, is energy. And what ends up happening is that sometimes it flies right off the Mizbech. Right? You have a nice big heat explosion on the top of the Mizbech, and it flies off. Now, if it's a piece of meat that wasn't totally consumed, so the Kohen says, okay, put it back on. Right, put it back on the grill. So in this case, when I say grill, I mean mizbech. But what if it's a horn or a hoof or any of these parts that are not fundamentally supposed to go up on top of the mizbech? So there, you don't have to put it back up. So So if a meat flies off the mizbech, bring that up. But if it's a horn or a hoof, no need to put it back up. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. But that's not why the Gemara introduced us to the Braisa. It's Rebbe. Rebbe Omer, Kasav Echad Omer V'Iktira Kohen Esakol, Riba, U'Kasav Echad Omer V'Asiso L'Asecha Basav Adam. Mi'et. The way Rebbe understands the sequence of these psukim is that it operates through the limud of Ribui U'Mi'et. So HaKetzad, Mechubam Yalu Pirshu Afilo Barosh Hashem Mizbech Yardu. It means that the only time the sinews, bones, horns, hooves are going to go up onto the Mizbeach is while they are attached and connected. But once you have detachment, and even if that detachment were to occur on the top of the Mizbeach, at that point in time, it has no place on the Mizbeach. You actually take it off the Mizbeach and you bring it down again. So this position, these positions of whether you have these non-Basar V'Dam portions of a carbon ola, to what degree do they have a place on the Mizbeach? So we see it's a machlokes satanayim. And so the Gemara says, so good. So regarding the Gedanasha, so we are now subject to a range of positions in terms of its place on the Mizbeach. Some are of the opinion that it belongs on the Mizbeach, even if detached, as long as it was placed on the Mizbeach while connected to the animal, it belongs on the Mizbeach. And the only time that it doesn't belong on the Mizbeach is if it flies off and it's bounced off the Mizbeach. Then and only then do I not need to bring it up if it bounced off independently. And then on the other, within that machlokas, you have another position, which is that once the gidim and the atzamos and the telafim and the karnayim, once they are detached from the bus of Adam, even on the mizbeach, at that point in time, they have no place on the mizbeach. Okay, so you have that range of positions. I don't know. The Gemara does not. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know. Fair speculation, but I simply don't know. Okay. And now the Gemara is going to go into its classic back and forth between where the Chachamim stand and where does Rabbi Huda and Hanasi stand regarding the Pesukim. Now, as far as the Chachamim concerned, if the bones are connected to the meat, I don't need a pasuk to tell me, hey, bring those bones up. Chachamim say to Rabbi Huda Anasi, let's consider. One of the things that's brought up onto the Mizbech of a carbon ola is the head. Now, when I say one of the things, of course, all of it's brought up onto the Mizbech. But the head is, of course, one of the items. And by the way, the Torah says at Beferush that the head of a carbon ola goes onto the Mizbech. Now, consider the composition of a head. It's mostly bone. There's a little flesh, but it's mostly bone. So you mean to tell me that I need a drusha to tell me that bones goes up onto the Mizbeach? I don't need a drusha. By virtue of the fact that the head is of an animal is going up onto the Mizbeach, so obviously bones are included. So that already is the starting point of the discussion. What's Rabbi Yehuda and us going to say? Ki Yitzir Kra Lepirshu. So in other words, so when the drushas only kick in, the drushas are only kicking in at the point of separation, not earlier than that. V'Rabbi Mechubar M'dehetera Lo Yitzir Kra L'Rabui Ki Yitzir Kra L'Ginanasha B'Mechubar. Now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is concerned, that is a fantastic argument. What's his counter-argument? As we are now on the top of Tzadim and Beis. So his counter-argument is, look, if we're talking about just regular non-Mizbeach items that are parv. Now, when I say parv now, I don't mean fleshik milchik parv. I mean neutral. Just in other words, the bones of the head are neutral. Is it basar v'dam? No. Is it have no place on the Mizbeach? Also no. Meaning, so it's a neutral item. But what about things that are not neutral? What are things of the carbon olive that are not neutral? The ginanasha. Why is the ginanasha not neutral? Because the ginanasha is also for you and me to eat. Oh. So in other words, now we're talking about a portion of the carbon ola that's not a neutral item. It's something which is actually negative. Negative in the sense that you and I can't eat it. Now we have a discussion, says Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So now am I allowed to take the ginanasha of a carbon ola and put it up onto the Mizbeach? And that's why I need the drasha. Ki yitzir kra l'ginanasha b'mechubar. So that's why I need a drasha. V'rabanan. Now,
but why is it just because you can't eat it, you can't go on the Mizbeach?
Oh, okay, so yeah, stay tuned.
What about Chalev?
The Gemara is going to make that point as well. Okay, all good points coming up. V'rabbanan mimashki Yisrael, minamosel Yisrael, minamutal Yisrael. And as far as the Chachamim are concerned, no, that already was understood. Meaning that the Torah already entertained the idea that the Ginanash is Aser, and still by the Karban Ola, one is allowed to bring it because the Torah says mimashki Yisrael. The Pasuk Yecheskel describes that what do we offer as Karbanos? We offer as Karbanos only something which we ourselves are allowed to eat. Okay, this is a principle that comes up throughout Shas. We saw it numerous times. Back in Zvachim, we saw it back in Menachos as well. Excuse me. And the idea is that if it's something that you and I are allowed to eat, it goes up onto the Mizbeach. If it's something that you and I are not allowed to eat, it doesn't go up onto the Mizbeach. So, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, so the Pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel is there to reveal to us that those things which are permitted to us go up on the Mizbeach, those things which are not do not go up on the Mizbeach. So therefore, the default actually by the Ginanash is that it shouldn't go up onto the Mizbeach. And so when the Pasuk is darshaning for us that everything of the Karban Olah goes up onto the Mizbeach, the everything is by definition coming to include the Ginanash. Now what's Rabbi Yehuda Ganassi going to say about that? V'Rabbi, mi d'dahavi, chelav adam. Now, as far as Rabbi's concerned, chelav adam, meaning let's take into consideration. You mean to tell me that the Pasuk in Yecheskel is there to preclude the Ginanasha? Consider. What is going up onto the Mizbeach? The Torah gives very clear instruction. The blood goes on the Mizbeach. Now, admittedly, the blood doesn't go on the Mizbeach. It goes on the side of the Mizbeach, but we're going to assume it's going on the Mizbeach. And the Chelev, the Torah gives clear instruction. Put the Chelev on the Mizbeach. Those are two items that you are not allowed to eat. And yet the Torah includes them to go up onto the Mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's argument to the Chachamim are as follows. If the blood and the chilev are going up onto the Mizbeach, and those are things which are prohibited to us, so they get an usher as well. And the Chacham's counter-argument to that, V'rabbanan mitzvasim b'kach shani. So the Chachamim said, you really can't put dam and chilev in the same sentence as get an usher. It's true that for the consumer, the average consumer, you and me, we're not allowed to eat of an animal, the dam, the chilev, the get an usher. All three of those things are prohibited. That part's true. But vis-a-vis the Mizbeach, they're not the same. Because when it comes to Dam and Chelev, even though they're Isurim, the Torah goes out of its way to say, take those items and put them on the Mizbeach. So the way the Gemara describes it is mitzvasan bekach. That's the mitzvah. Mashenkin, when it comes to the Ginanasha, so now, the Torah didn't explicitly tell me to put it on the Mizbeach. We're not allowed to eat it, because it's a Ginanasha. We have a principle in the Torah, Mimashka Yisrael, which means that we can only put things onto the Mizbeach that are edible for us. Again, blood and chelev are out of the discussion because the Torah goes out of its way to say they do belong on the Mizbeach. So where do we stand in the Gid Anasha? And that's Rebbe's counter argument to the Chachamim. Because we don't know, now I need a drasha for that. Good. So what you see in the Gemara over here clearly is this ambiguity regarding the Gid Anasha. In terms of, there is no, meaning by carbonola, just to be clear, there's no ambiguity. You're going to take the Gid Anasha of the carbonola and put it onto the Mizbeach. Where the ambiguity lies is in the idea of, at what point in time now do I take it off the Mizbeach? Upon separation, upon it being thrown off the Mizbeach, and what this machlokus is really predicated on is the Gid Anasha, where is its place vis-a-vis the Mizbeach? Because on one hand, we have the idea of Mimashka Yisrael, that you only put things on the Mizbeach that are kosher and permitted for us to eat. On the other hand, the Torah says regarding the carbonola, v'ktiras ha-kol al ha-mizbeach. So the Gid Anasha gets a little bit complicated, it's a little bit confusing, and that's why the Tanayim are a little bit divided in terms of how much of a place does the Gid Anasha have on the top of the mizbeach. Okay, now we're going to stop over here, but I'll make one more point before we end. I'll say it again tomorrow as well. It's such an interesting point. By Karban Pesach, we roast the entire animal in its entirety. We take out the bowels of the animal, right? The intestines and all that good stuff. But in other words, but the animal's roasted whole, right? That's the mitzvah in the Torah. The animal's roasted whole by the Karban Pesach, with or without the Gid Anasha being removed. Yeah, right. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful question. With or without the Gid Anasha being removed. Now, on one hand, you'll think to yourself, well, the Torah wants me to roast it in its entirety. So if I start taking out the Gid Anasha, I'm going to have to be ripping basically the animal apart to get to the Gid Anasha. On the other hand, it's the Gid Anasha. We're not allowed to eat the Gid Anasha. And we're going to be discussing later in the perek what happens if you cook the animal with the Gid Anasha in it. So what do you do? So the Rambam says you roast it whole.
Why can't you say asad docholat asad?
Meaning the mitzvah says of Yechilas Karban Pesach
Should
override. That could be an argument. That could be an argument for the Rambam. But it could be. But the Rambam doesn't. The Rambam just simply says you roast it whole.
How are you eating it?
Then after it's roasted, you take it out.
After?
Yeah. After you roast it, you take it out. So the Ravid over there writes, right? No promises, but I'll bring it in tomorrow. The Ravid writes that if I was sitting down with the Rambam, it's one of the best Ravids. If I was sitting down with the Rambam and this is what he offered me as a Karban Pesach, so I throw it right back at him. Meaning there's no way that you're going to leave the Gid Anasha in there for roasting. But again, though, the machlok is very similar to what we just discussed right now. Meaning the ambiguity of the Gid Anasha in terms of it's not the same machlokus, by the way. In other words, we're talking now about the Gid Anasha of a Karban Ola and its place on the top of the Mizbeach. But what we just saw in the Gemara is the starting point of the discussion. Meaning, does it belong up there or does it not belong up there? On one hand, it's part of the Karban Ola. On the other hand, Mimashka Yisrael. So you see that tension of, you know, where's this place vis-a-vis the top of the Ola? And similarly, it's not the same Achlokas, but similarly between the Rambam and the Ravid, regarding the Karban Pesach, the Torah says roasted whole. The Torah says not to eat the Gid Anasha.
We don't know. We take some of the parts out. The inside of the things take out. So it's not whole. So if it's not whole, then Gid Anasha also should come out. You're not taking inside the guts and stuff.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
It's not whole.
Okay. I didn't. this machlokus is an old one. I'm not. You know. I didn't reinvent the wheel. Rabbi